Hello, everybody. A Father's Story of Injustice presents its third official episode. I want to express how much I greatly appreciate everyone who has been listening in and following the podcast and social media accounts. Even through these tumultuous and uncharted waters, it is refreshing to know that we are not alone in this fight. Many of you have reached out with your stories and everything you have been through and are going through in regards to your children, parental alienation, corrupt court systems, and so much more. Please don't stop fighting. Please also know that I am not a licensed psychologist or healthcare professional, nor do I claim to be. But since discussing our experience with parental alienation, I thought we could dive into parental alienation itself for a better understanding of how our experience fits in. Babe, would you like to talk a little bit about what parental alienation is and the signs of it?
Yeah, sure. Thanks again for having me on here. Being able to discuss these things on your podcast is therapeutic for me. When parental alienation was first brought to my attention many years ago, I started diving deep into the weeds there of trying to understand why it occurs, how it occurs, when it's occurring. I spoke at great length with my own personal therapist, regarding this matter. And it's kind of scary because it seems to be at times it comes across as a misunderstood subject.
Sure.
At times it comes across as, Boy, it's, you know, I've mentioned it to people and it's like, you're kind of almost saying like a real foul word to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because of the unknown impact that it has on children, because we're just kind of starting to learn more about it. We've had the opportunity to now talk with individuals who are now in their 20s and 30s that this happened to them, but they really weren't really aware of that's what was happening to them until into their adult life.
Right.
That one of their parents was doing that in the situation.
Right.
So I got into a conversation with a therapist who specializes in reunification therapy, and I asked her to help me better understand her stance on parental alienation. And she kind of made it very, very simple in that when she sees the child portraying that one parent is perfect, does no wrong, is the savior that is the only thing that really, it's almost like the child sees that parent as the only reason why they're like alive. You know, it's almost like, you know, when you first have a baby, right? If as a parent, if you let that child go, that child will die. It is our responsibility as a parent to keep that child. We have to nurture it. We have to feed it. We have to change its diapers. We have to do everything for that child. In parental alienation, the child seems to take on that need of survival based on that parent. And the other parent is the polar opposite. The other parent is portrayed not, and it's vocal by the child, that the other parent is evil, that does all wrong, that can't do anything right, that is the epitome of the devil. And that's the way it kind of comes across, is the true bad and good. It was a little bit similar. Basically what she said was one parent is perfect and the other parent is evil and all bad.
Which is kind of interesting because the child is saying this other parent's bad, even though they're not spending time with that parent or may not even know the parent because of the alienation. So they're saying this based on the other parent's words. Wouldn't that be correct?
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the things that I've noticed that therapists key in on, that I've been able to understand better. When the child starts speaking of things that they shouldn't have knowledge of, that's when it becomes apparent that the coaching, the manipulation, the coercion by the other parent who's creating this alienation has imposed this on the child. The child is no longer, and they use words that are not age appropriate. They have knowledge of things like child support. They have knowledge of things like adoptions. They have things, they have this knowledge that as parents, we tend to protect our children, or at least I try and protect my children from. You know, it was kind of funny. You know, I was discussing the age appropriate regarding adoption the other day with a therapist, and you know, I've been fortunate enough to, I've adopted two kids in my parental life. And my two children that I've adopted still don't fully grasp the idea of what adoption is. And
no.
They were there in the courtroom.
Yeah.
They spoke to the judge that day.
Yeah.
And the judge asked them to make sure that they understood what was happening.
And they did in like very simple terms. And the judge did he did that for them.
In a very innocent way, right?
Yes.
As a child should, right?
Yes.
And so when you see the change in the child, that I guess that's the hurtful part, is that the idea that your child has been exposed to things that you so dearly want to protect them from. We live in such a scary world these days. We live in this world of unknowns, and there's so much, as a parent, I have so much fear for what my children are going to encounter in this world that I never had to worry about.
I know.
That when I see things that are being done to my children in such a way that for me, I would have done everything I could to protect them from that. The fear, the anxiety that's created with these things, it's so unfair.
And you have like almost no control on two of the children. So it's very unfortunate.
It is. My only hope is that I get a therapist who is willing to take on the unknown and go in with an open mind and still stay unbiased. It's almost like they don't want to blame anybody. Like almost like, and I guess that's the frustrations, is that the therapist sometimes comes across like, it's not like the alienating parent, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard because I want to go, what are you thinking? Like, it's clear. It is. Look at what this child is talking about. Look at what this child is experiencing. That part is hard.
Yeah. So I mean, in general, taking all that into account, you know, parental alienation is bad mouthing the other parent, exaggerating about the other parent, lying about their actions, or like you mentioned, the kids knowing things they shouldn't. So talking to them about court or court documents or child support, which we've dealt with too, you know, the children shouldn't know about that. And that's kind of the what is of parental alienation. But there's also a lot of signs that you can recognize too.
Oh, no doubt. I want to go back just real quick.
Oh,
I want to
sure.
back up to some of the things, especially in court related material. One of the classic, and this kind of goes into then the signs, is the alienating parent will then blame the parent for that child knowing about these court things. And it's the alienated parent's fault that the child knows this.
Because the target parent's not around, so they can't be responsible for it.
Right. Like the poor child just happened to find it.
Right.
Or they just happened to open it. And you know, it's like the alienating parent stands back, allows this child to see these documents, exposes them to it, and then says to everybody that wants to listen, the target parent is at fault for doing this. And this is how they've caused this, right?
And these people believe them, and there's not even a logical way for it to make sense.
But and the really sad part is, then they actually demonstrate how it has affected the child. Right? The child gets upset.
Mm-hmm.
The child gets anxiety, and they get stress, and it then leads into them taking that stress to school or to extracurricular activities, because there's almost like what I've seen in the last few weeks is that the child becomes so overwhelmed with having to deal with this adult stuff,
mm-hmm,
that then it gets like brought into these other areas, almost like it's like the whole gossip thing. Like if you gossip in your house, you teach your kids to gossip. So then they go to school and they gossip. Well, now, you know, like I see then the child, then it then gets expressed at school, or it gets expressed in other avenues, because the child doesn't have any other out, because what they're dealing with is far beyond their maturity level. The kids should just be left as kids.
Well, that's where the mental and emotional abuse comes into play. That's what that is.
Right. And so, you know, some of the signs that you also see will be an exhibited or expressed fear all of a sudden,
mm-hmm,
or even the word hate is used towards the targeted parent. You'll see false and frivolous, illogical accusations towards that alienated parent, things that don't exist, things that like, well, then like, if this actually happened, why wasn't this brought up years ago? Why all of a sudden now? It's like, it's just another thing to be thrown against the wall to see if it'll stick. Like, let's just make up another one.
Yeah.
And, yep. And because the last 10 didn't work. So maybe the 11th one will. The unconditional support by the alienating parent, they come across like they are the perfect parent, right? You hear the term a lot in fractured families, where sometimes one of the parents will become like the Disneyland parent, and it'll usually be the parent who maybe has a little less visitation time.
Mm-hmm.
They end up, you know, during that visitation time, they make that visitation time sometimes like way over the top. They take them on exuberant vacations, and they do all this stuff, right? Because maybe they only get 2 weeks a year with this child because they live in another state or another country or whatever it may be. And so then you hear stories of, you know, maybe the main custodial parent gets upset because they can't do that for their child on a regular basis. And so, but in alienation, the roles are reversed. It's almost a way of control. It's a way of maintaining that need, that bond that the child has with the alienating parent, because look at what I do. And I've even heard it be repeated in therapy sessions where the alienating parent will state, I do all of this for my child.
And that's because they don't allow the other parent to, because they're restricting their time. And I mean, also like not following court orders and allowing that bond to happen, not allowing that relationship to happen.
No doubt. And so that goes into, you know, again, with the restricting of time, right? And it's because my theory goes that the more time that child gets to spend with that targeted parent, kids have an uncanny way of being honest.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
And my theory is that when the alienating parent loses that control. And that child is out of their spider web for a weekend or a week or, heaven forbid, an entire summer, right? Mm-hmm. That child at some point will become honest, because they'll actually start to see quite quickly that they have no reason to have fear. They have no reason to have the distrust. They have no reason to have everything that was ingrained in them, that almost like the old memories come back, where the child wants that relationship. They want that bond with the other parent. And then they start talking. This is what mom does, or this is what dad has done, and this is what they've said about you. And I think that that's where the ultimate fear is, that alienating parent loses that control. So they want to restrict that time,
because the truth comes out, all their lies come out. And I think that's also why the narcissist goes hand in hand with the parental alienator. So like, so often, you know, in all the research that I've done, the two really go hand in hand. Like, the parental alienator is also a narcissist, which I'm not going to dig into that today, but
that'll have to be for another episode. Yeah. Maybe you have me on.
That's okay. Where all that comes from.
Well, and that word narcissist is a common word to describe that parent, not just by the therapists that I've spoken to, but by other victims of this corrupt court system.
Mm-hmm.
They see the signs of narcissism in their former partners, right? In the other parent. And that goes for moms and dads, from what we yeah. understand.
Yeah.
It's not a character trait of one or the other. It's a character trait of people who do this onto children.
Correct. Well, okay. Speaking of people doing this onto children. So in general, it kind of, in your words and in what you've learned, what kind of person would try to alienate a child from the other parent?
Clearly, more often than not, the alienating parent is going to be the main custodial parent, because they have the control. It's how they weaponize the child mm-hmm. against the other parent. It's the last remaining piece that they can take from that parent. I haven't really, you know, I look forward to maybe diving into a little bit more of how often this happens in relationships that didn't include marriage, and when this happens in relationships that do include marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be interesting.
I seem to be running into a lot more people that this happens to in marriages, but I am also well aware of some situations where, you know, they dated for a couple months,
had a kid,
and then one just it happens.
Well, I think that there's just this motivation and a desire to basically get revenge against the ex. So married or not married, it's that desperate need there.
No doubt, and I think that desperate need is driven by the narcissist, the emotionally unstable, right? They don't have the wherewithal in them to look at the other parent, their former partner, and be like, okay, great. You know what? I'm glad that they've made these changes. I'm glad that they're a different person. Wow. You know, yeah, I really wish that they would have been that way when we were together, or whatever it may be. But instead of understanding the changes or differences, they target them.
Yeah. I mean, and for you specifically, you have changed. I mean, you are so far from the person you were years and years ago with your exes. And I think, you know, that causes a lot of issues, because they haven't changed.
No doubt. Their stories are still the same.
Yeah.
You know, And I guess, you know, that's the thing that, you know, frustrates me, is that, and I guess confuses me, because like, they really just need to understand that those changes are beneficial to our child.
Yeah.
I get it that they don't like it, but it's not their job to like it anymore.
No.
Most of them have moved on.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, well, you think.
Maybe they're I don't know. Maybe yeah. it's because they're stuck in a similar relationship. I yeah. see a lot of similarities to who they're dating and who they were married to when they were married to me. You yeah. know, kind of losers. Yeah. You
but
know?
No, they should be happy. I mean, your changes are to better your children's lives. And I mean, of course, yours.
No doubt.
So I'm going to transition a little bit again. Do you think that parental alienation is a crime? Because personally, I do. And I think these mothers should be held liable for it.
100%. People who have dove deep into this, professionals in the field of therapy, acknowledge that this is a type of abuse. Any other type of anything followed by abuse on a child results in severe punishment in our society.
Well, there's lasting damage. So physical or not, there's lasting damage on it. And I think that's kind of why I think it should be criminalized, because of what that inflicts on the child.
No doubt. The emotional trauma, the lasting scars and wounds that are caused on just how that child is going to view the world. It needs to be taken into another level in the court system. Both in family court and also, I believe, with Child Protective Services and on the civil side for making it criminal.
I found a lot of research saying that, you know, emotional child abuse such as this, it really is considered like family violence. So that's kind of where my head's at with that.
No doubt. You know, and here's, I was thinking about this, earlier today, and I was thinking about like, what if inside of a family, it wasn't like, and what we're discussing here today is parental alienation. What if it was child alienation? What if inside the family, one child was signaled, put off to the side, where maybe one child didn't receive the games, they didn't receive the dessert, they didn't receive the things, they were kind of admonished, they were the bad child.
Well, right? So we have experience with that in a different setting, not having to do with your sons, not with parents either. So interesting dynamic.
But as a grandparent, and that's what made me kind of think of it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen when a grandparent treats a child that way in a setting where, you know, a lot of people have their kids watched by grandparents and things like that. And we all expect, you know, our grandparents to be equal and fair and loving and awesome and everything like that. But what we have found is it isn't the case. And we've seen what the emotional trauma is on that, and it's lasting, and it's required a lot of hard work by me as a dad to reinforce those things in a positive way to avoid that.
Yeah, I hear you. Do you think children experience hatred naturally? Or I guess more specifically, in your opinion, do you think your sons, and you don't have to answer it so specifically, you can be general, like, do you think they've experienced hatreds towards you naturally? Like, do you think that's a natural thing?
No, this is a nature versus nurture thing. And it is clear as day that the innocence of a child is nothing but love and a desire to live life in kind of a sculpted little bubble that hopefully as parents, that's what we create, right? This is 100% taught. Yep. Hate is taught.
Yeah.
Hate is taught to not just children. Hate is taught to adults. We live in a world of that, you know, saying is, and I guess maybe it's because we get to say things in our society today that we are not held accountable for. And we get to say things and spout off and make accusations and do things that are in a very negative fashion, but there's no repercussions. So when we can teach that it is okay to hate certain things and that's okay because I love you.
Absolutely. I absolutely believe it's self-taught. An interesting fact, I guess. So along with like the many individuals who research this, there is a parental alienation study group. So it's an organization dedicated to studying this issue specifically. They estimate that more than 3.9 million children in the United States are experiencing moderate to severe parental alienation at any given time. Pretty crazy, huh?
You know, and I just to speak on that real quick, you know, I'm involved now with a lot of different groups throughout our country, and these groups have now also now have international people.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh yeah, lots of
you could probably move that decimal point to the right and go 39 million in our country, and I would not bat an eye that almost 40 million children in our country are dealing with this.
Yeah.
It is significant. It is severe. It is serious. And at some point, it needs to be dealt with accordingly.
I think it will. I think with how much it's blown up. I mean, it's always been there, but it's, you know, the researchers and these therapists and everyone who's bringing it to light, like it's always been there. It's finally, you know, coming to light. You know, I will always have hope and continue praying that your exes stop these games and stop their vindictiveness and being so evil. I mean, there's absolutely no need for it. You know, you want to be in your children's lives. It boggles my mind. And I think maybe because I still think that they have this like sick obsession with you, because it doesn't make any sense that they would not let a good father who's been fighting be in their child's lives. You know, and I still think that they're mad that you're a different person now than you were when you were with them. Nonetheless, this battle and these fights won't stop unless they stop. And I personally am not going to give up. And there's quite a ways to go until your sons are of majority age.
Yeah. And, you know, I really appreciate you saying that and doing things like your podcast that you invite me on. Because as we've seen, the more we do this, the more traction we get.
Yes.
The more traction we get, the more stories we hear.
Mm-hmm.
We get more people reaching out. We get more people that are actually now willing to, they want to share their story with me, with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to my understanding that you may be having some other guests on your show other than just me.
Yes. I'm actually very excited for the future episodes. We've been talking, and I do have a couple individuals that are willing to share their story. And I just hope everyone tunes in for those episodes, because they are going to be, I don't think saying very good is appropriate, because these stories are not heartwarming.
It's painful.
They're very painful. But I think it's really important for them to get their stories out and for more people to be aware that this really is happening all over. So yes, I'm very excited for that. And I know you'll be able to join.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to interact with them on this level, hear their points of view, and see where the similarities fall and where the differences lie.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I agree. All right. Well, I think we are going to end here. So everyone else who's listening, please remember you can reach out if you would like to be a guest on our podcast, because we would absolutely love to have you. I have many ways you can contact me, you know, social media, email, all of that. So thank you for listening, and stay tuned for our coming episodes.
Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely.